हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So continuing with the point that contrasting the principles of religion with irreligion, right? How they come up, how Kali works. Page 30. Following in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikit, it is the duty of all executive heads of states to see that the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and untruthfulness, are established in the state, and that the principles of irreligion, namely pride, illicit female association or prostitution, intoxication and falsity, are checked by all means, and to make the best use of a bad bargain. The personality of Kali may be transferred to places of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and slaughterhouses, if there are any places like that. In other words, the government should see that it's not going on in regular society. But if need be, then you have a place where these things go on. Right? And then whoever really needs to do those things, they go there. But they don't bother the general populace. You know, it's like Vegas is sitting out in the middle of a desert somewhere. People have to go out of their way to get there. No one just passes through Vegas. It's not on the route to anywhere, actually. You know, it's just in its own place. So if you go through Vegas, it means you want to go there. So therefore, if that place is there and the other places it doesn't happen, okay, it works. But it shouldn't be happening in regular society. You shouldn't just put in the regular old places. You know, things like this gambling things and all these kind of, does that make sense? Like that, and that's a new thing they put up where you have these kind of like places where people go to eat with the family and they have the pokies. Mm-hmm. We call them one-armed bandits, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Slot machines.
Yeah, slot machines. Yeah. So then they just put those in there, and then people see that and get distracted. So the government shouldn't be doing this. But if they need, then they can be there in those places where it's going on. That's making the best use of a bad bargain. In other words, restrict it down to one place. And if you want it, you have to go all the way out of the way to go there. Right? And that's if there are any places like that. If you don't need to maintain, why bother? Right? Don't open them. In other words, if they're not there, don't open them. But if they're already there, restrict everything down to that. Those who are addicted to these irreligious habits may be regulated by the injunctions of the scriptures. That's why Arthashastra will talk about these places. Right? In other words, there are ministers, are superintendents that take care of these areas, and there's laws about it. Just like where drinking happens, is that if the person gets drunk, at that time his money is taken away from him, and he's sent out. Means he'll get his money, or he's sent out with him, but the point is he's not allowed to do anything. Like now in the modern thing is when they get that drunk, they take away their keys. They don't let them drive. So before, they took away their money so they can't spend anymore. Because once you get to a certain amount of drunk, it doesn't matter if you drink more. You're going to be the same amount of drunk. But they think, I got to keep drinking, but they're just wasting money. It's already a waste in the first place, right? But now it just gets ridiculous. So in other words, these things are going on, but you shouldn't take advantage. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's very specific. You know, the quality of what you're dealing with, everything has to be of a particular quality so that it gets an effect. Then they feel it there. So then for minimal money, they get maximum effect. Mm-hmm. Right? But only those kind of people will go there. It's not allowed outside of there. Outside of those places, you just don't have these things. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, you know. Okay. You know, prostitutes, they have their area. They stay in their area. They don't go walking around and try. You know, you don't stick up stickers in phone booths. You know, you just don't do stuff like that. In other words, those who, it's like if somebody really wants to go look for it, right, they'll find it. You don't have to worry. You don't have to advertise. But for those people who are not looking for that, you don't advertise. Does that make sense? So that's the process. Right? Those who are addicted to these irreligious habits may be regulated by the injunctions of the scripture. In no circumstances should they be encouraged by the state, right? Just the state regulates what's already there, you know, and it's restricted down to those kind of situations. Right? In other words, the state should categorically stop all sorts of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and falsity. The state which wants to eradicate corruption by majority may introduce the principles of religion in the following manner. Okay, corruption by majority means that your major amount of people, they're not corrupt. Right? So if there's a small amount in the state, okay. You know? Because then from that, the money will come in. That will go towards helping and doing different things in the state. But that money is a separate money. Bad money is always kept separately in the treasury. It's not just like we saw from Manu, is that fines that come from the sinful activities, those aren't kept in the regular treasury. Right? They're kept separately. That's only given to Brahmins or like this. It's you know, high grade Brahmins, not even your general Brahmins. Like that. But otherwise it's not used. So then the worst gets the benefit of the best. Like that. But it's never used for themselves. Even Brahmins, if they get money from a place that's not ideal, they'll never use it for themselves personally. They'll give it in charity, use it for dependents, but they never use it themselves. It's bad money. So one has to know about bad money. Like one Brahmin was telling me, his grandfather was the minister of the economics, you know, or the treasury, for one of the kingdoms in India. But because when the whole thing collapsed, you know, with the so-called freedom of India, which they just, all they did was do with it. It means the British controlled India, right? But left the culture the way it was and everything like that, though they tried to influence. But they left the kings, they left the things, they even did this, the rules, means they judge Indians according to Manu, right? They judge British according to the British laws. Right, but the Indians, they judge according to Manu. It's like this. So then when India got freedom, then they kicked out the British, so they were no longer influencing. But now the Indians did it themselves and took over and took away the kingdoms and their kingdoms. Right, so it means, in other words, what the Mughals and the British never did, you know, because they understood these guys are good managers, leave them in place, then India did itself, whatever. That's a whole other story. But the point is when that happened, then this minister, the treasury, he somehow or another got away with a huge amount of the treasury because it was going to be lost to the central government. Like that. But it was understood it wasn't good money because how it was gotten. And then it was seen by the time it got to the third generation, because something lasts only three generations. Well, it's actually two and a half. You see it runs out in the third. So then it was noted that in that third generation that everything had been lost and was degraded. And then they understood that was because they lived off of this bad money. If they'd taken that, used it for charity, used it for yajnas, used it for those kind of things like that, then it wouldn't have had any problem. But they used it for their own maintenance. So therefore, then things went bad. Does that sound like something? Yes.
Is it also that the money remains bad only for that length of time?
It only remains as bad because you've gotten it bad. But if you, when you use, means in other words, if you give it in charity, it's not bad anymore. It's been purified. Like that, or use it for dependence. Just you can't use it yourself because you're the one that received it. You know what I'm saying? So it's purified by that charity.
Yes. The doubt remains that for me that how do you know, is it that the hand which gave it to you, if that may have been fine, he gave it to you properly, but he didn't know that he got it and it was bad before?
No, because it's purified. When it's charity, it thinks about charity. We're talking about the example is that, say, Prabhupada's in Africa, he gets a donation from a, you know, somewhat religious family, but their family business is hard alcohol. Mm-hmm. Right? And they give a quite sizable donation. He didn't use that like he normally would, putting it into his account that's used for traveling and preaching and those things. He took that and just put it in the deities at the Kundi.
Yes.
Right? Because going to Krishna is not going to be a problem.
Yes.
You know? Does that make sense? Yes. So it's from there, and they needed it there. Otherwise, he could have given it, you know, Mayapur project, Vrindavan project. Point is he wouldn't have used that himself. So that's the principle. Right? Does that make sense? So if someone else gets it from a bad source, and then they give it to you, you've gotten it from a good source.
Right.
But same time, means the point is there's still something's there, because not from the money, it's from the person who had the money, because he got the money, so you get some karma, you get something. You use it, then there's more. Mm-hmm. But he gives it in charity, so the money is pure, but then the karma from the person, you're getting that from charity. So that's why they only give that kind of money to very, very well-situated Brahmins. Does that make sense?
So the charity that a Brahmana gives is to use it in the service of the Lord.
Charity Brahmin gives is for charity. Whatever it's for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It means what is the category of charity? That's what Brahmins do. Everybody's supposed to do that.
Okay.
Right? You give to Brahmins, you give to the needy. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like that. So Brahmins do the same thing. They give to the Brahmins, they give to the needy. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Charity is charity.
I see.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So that concept, use the money for maintenance so that I can serve Krishna, that's not good enough.
No.
Because
the problem is not that it's not good enough, we're not good enough.
Okay.
That's the problem. You always have to factor into it us. You know, we're the weak link in the whole. You know, I mean, the whole cause of creation is made by Krishna, is pervaded by Krishna, it is Krishna. It's only Krishna and his energy is interacting. So where's the weak point? Right? It's us. We're not seeing it like that. So. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, the state which wants to eradicate corruption by majority can introduce the principles of religion in the following manner. So here's a practical administrative application. One, two compulsory fasting days in a month, if not more, austerity. Even from the economic point of view, such two fasting days in a month in the state will save tons of food, and the system will act very favorably on the general health of the citizens, right? So there is that mundane side. The health will be good. You need some break. Anything that you're doing good is supposed to be a break. You do yoga asanas, you only do them 6 days a week. You exercise, you only do 6 days a week. You're not supposed to do seven. Like that, right? You're supposed to rest on the seventh, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's just that, you know, that's the original law, and that is what the modern science has worked out, you know? So the point is that there's always this break. So in eating grains, it's supposed to be at least twice in a month. Like that. Does that make sense? Because we don't mean others may do others on the Purnima, Amavasas, or being like that, or on the yeah. So we don't bother so much with that, but then you have all these other festival days, right? You know, appearance days of Acharyas and of the Lord. So then in that way, you end up with minimum two, but sometimes, you know, three or four times a month. So that's the whole point. Then that will take care of that aspect, right? People will become more austere. It'll bring out that austerity. Then they'll be able to, you know, function properly. Mm-hmm. Two, there will be compulsory marriage of young boys and girls attaining 24 years of age and 16 years of age, respectively. There's no harm in co-education in the schools and colleges, provided the boys and girls are duly married. In case there is any intimate connection between a male and female student, they should be married properly without illicit relation. The Divorce Act is encouraging prostitution, and this should be abolished. It's not that things don't go wrong, but the point is if you think, well, if this doesn't go right, we can just be divorced and then we can try something else, people aren't going to make the effort. The whole point is basically anybody can function with anybody, but the amount of work that you have to put into it is so great.
Yes.
That's why it's recommended. Find somebody who it works easily with. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why the astrological, the cultural, all the different things are seen that are common. Right? Then you have less of it. Then there's less of the thought of this kind of thing. And if not, there's separation. Right? That's perfectly bona fide in the Vedic. It's not desirable, but it's fine. But that's the point. If you say that it's just like this. If there's no illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating, it's reduced down to a very small portion of the society. Same way, if you say no divorce, it's reduced.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
So the point is this is, you know, whatever the past may be, for the future generations, if there's training in that, then it works. You understand? So as the generation goes, it gets easier and easier.
Yes. Can we say that remarriage is actually the problem more than separation?
No, what we're talking about in here is if you think that, well, we'll give it a, you know, give it our quote-unquote best shot, means, you know, as long as the, you know, the stars are still flying around and the music's still playing, then it's there, and as soon as, the, you know, we find the carousel stopped, you know,
yeah.
then it's, you know, then it's, oh, well, we're out of here. You know, I mean, it's a new phrase. We fell out of love. I mean, when I was a kid, it was never there,
yeah.
Right? You remember it before? No, it was not there. It didn't happen. I mean, people got divorced, but you didn't say, I fell out of love. You just say, we hate each other or something. You know? But now it's, oh, we fell out of love, you know, like that. So then, you know, people just don't try. The point is if there's no divorce, people are more careful about who they marry. Because if you think, I'm going to be with this person the rest of my life, you're more careful about who it is.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you have people around you who are very sober about it. So nowadays, it's just about, you know, if you look at somebody and there's stars in your eyes, then that's the man, you know, that's the woman. But the point is, okay, like that. But I'm sure if you took, you know, all the, you know, what, 3.5 billion ladies on the planet, okay, drop out the ones too young and too old, you know, a few billion in the middle, then, you know, bring all the boys to the world, there's going to be at least more than one that they're going to, you know, their eyes are going to go starry about, you know. So that means, okay, but amongst those so many thousands, then...
what to do?
Yeah. You know, so which one of those? So that's why then there's the Vedic system, so you're careful. Nowadays, people aren't careful. That's why it doesn't work. You understand? So the whole attitude towards it means there's no training. Like that. I've met many devotees who they say that the wife's a good cook. And they're saying, wow, okay, she's a nice cook, this and that. And then you take it for granted that, you know, she learned before. And he says, no, I taught her after marriage. The man says. They didn't know how to boil water, you know, like that, you know. So that's the whole thing. There's no training, this idea, no, you have to get this education. Okay, great, get your academic education. What about your lifestyle? Okay, you'll be great in the office, but what about at home? There's no idea of training, right? And so therefore, nobody's trained, it doesn't work. Now, if you think about it, then training will be there. If life means something, training will be there. And then because of that, then things will go better. Then you're careful who you marry, right? Because if there's no illicit connection, then it's going to be more of a sober. It's a matter of you're marrying a personality rather than just that body looks good. Right? And so that's the whole point. And then that means then girls, because they know they're trying to catch a personality, they're going to dress different. If you think I got to physically attract the boy and then he'll like me, they'll dress one way. If you think it's about I have to attract a person and he's got to like me as a person, you'll dress totally different. Is that what it says? These are facts. These aren't opinions. These aren't, oh, that's archaic. This is just fact. It's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how it rolls. People aren't aware of it, so therefore then they run into trouble. Right? So the idea of the no divorce is that therefore people will take it very seriously, and the whole process will be taken seriously. Because if there's no divorce, then it goes back to, you know, the training. And then who can you train? Those that are conceived when you're married. Right? Does that make sense? And those conceived married, then you have some scars. So this all then makes for the whole thing. Then it works very nicely. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that if you do this, then everybody goes into the other one. Right? So that's the whole thing. Right? But we just focus, oh, divorce is not practical, it's not this and that. So what's not practical? That not allowing divorce, or allowing people to don't know what they're doing to get married? Right? That's the whole thing. To make an awareness. Otherwise, we just go through, no, I feel like it, it's going to be good. Because as soon as that feeling is there, what are you touching? Right? What is it that makes it feel, oh, this is going to be perfect? What are you looking at? Are you looking at, yes, the next 50 years or the next 30 years is going to be great. Is that how they're feeling? No, what's the term used? What's the word used?
Now.
Not now.
Senses.
Huh?
Senses.
No. We're talking about the romantic term of the relationship. What's the quality of the relationship? How long will it last?
Honeymoon.
Huh? No, that's we're talking. That's not facts. I'm talking about the feeling. Eternal, forever.
Yeah.
Right? BFF. You know, best friends forever. So what are you touching there? You're touching that Brahman aspect of the relationship. So what are you touching? Krishna. Krishna, it is eternal. Therefore, we feel that eternalness. But it's not coming from that dead matter. It's coming from the Lord's potency. It's coming through there. That's why in the wedding it says, talks about love, the Kama Stuti. Love is, you know, coming from love. Love is going to love. Love is the giver. Love is the receiver. Right? What is it talking about? It's talking about this feeling that we have and this affection. That's coming from Krishna, going to Krishna. We're only an instrument. We always are only an instrument. We think, no, I'm the man. You know, this is my relationship, this is my love, this is my, you know, my story. You know, like that. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that that's not actually what's happening. So when you touch it, yes, you will feel like that. But the point is therefore only touch that feeling with someone that you can do that with, that you can actually make it work with. That's the point. Otherwise, then we have the other points that were made. 6 months, honeymoon, you know, all these different things. Because that's the reality. So unless it's someone who has that, then you can make that a shot. Because otherwise, then the problem comes is that why would you want to work so hard? If you don't respect the person, you don't want to work that hard. You have that respect, then you are willing to put in the work that will make it work. Does that make sense?
Yes.
These are the considerations why not marriage. Not, oh, that's archaic, that's this, that's that. No, this is real science. We have to understand this. If archaic means it's old, we have to remember modern is millions of years old. Mm-hmm. So if anything's archaic, because when we say archaic, it means it's old and it doesn't work. So actually, modern is archaic.
Yes.
Vedic is new, fresh, and in the moment. This is the reality. We're talking archaic, modern's archaic, because it's never worked. It never has worked. And it's as old as the hills. As long as you've had people not following the Vedas, you've had modern. Yes.
The social breakdown of family life today is that couples want privacy. They go very far away from the nuclear of the family, where the marriage is supported by the village, by the family, the extended, right?
Yes.
So when they, you know, eclipse themselves into another country, in another city, on top of a building, obviously they run into trouble because they have no support.
Yes. So yes, of course. These are, yeah, finer points of all this. But the thing is there also is the thing is it's not just them going away that's the problem. It's also the family acting in such a way that they want to go away. They also have that. Because Manu does mention for spiritual development, separation of the family, meaning up into... In other words, the concept of nuclear family is also Vedic, but it's only recommended for Brahmins who are interested purely in spiritual development. It's not that you have to do, but because why would happen? Let's say you have 10 brothers. Okay, if all the 10 brothers live together in one house, okay, then when it comes to doing, let's say, a yajna for auspiciousness, how many yajnas will they do for the family? One. Now, if they're all in nuclear families, how many will they do? 10. So only when it's about spiritual. You'll have one set of deities in the house. There'll be one puja. If you have, there'll be 10 sets of deities. So only on the spiritual, then it's considered okay. Only because that particular family will get more. But other than that, it's not recommended at all. Breaking up the family, not functioning as a unit, is not recommended unless it's simply for spiritual. That's how Prabhupada could say devotees could leave the family, move into the temple, because it was purely spiritual. Mm-hmm. Right? So the rules apply differently if you have community, because it's not exactly that it's necessarily that. It's just the relatives are driving you nuts. Right? So that's the thing, is on both sides, the relatives should know how to behave. They should know who's the boss. Like he brought up remarriage. That's a real fun point. Is that a remarried woman does not have the emotional control and rights of a first married woman. And I've seen so many family situations break down because the woman absolutely refuses to follow that rule. It means that if she's remarried, she's walking into an already existing family that already has relationships. And so she is just an assistant in that. One may say, women's rights, this, that. It's like, who cares? This women's rights means she'll destroy the family, because women's rights means it's about me. I'm the center. That's the meaning of women's rights. It means I have the control of the first married woman, that how I feel everybody has to do. The first married woman can do that. Because she's starting with the man, there's nothing. He may have a few friends, but how serious is that? Right? And so the family develops their friends, they develop the relative, the children are there, then the whole everything develops from there. So then she is the center. But if she walks in already existing and demands, I'm the center, she destroys everything. Because the women, the point is the children want to relate with their own mother. But then she, because that mother is related to the father, and then this new wife is, you know, connected to the father, you can't talk about her. And that this is just downright pure 100% nonsense. They just destroy families because of the false ego. Their attachment. So in other words, and that's what happens in the modern society. When the women say we want to move everywhere, do everything, it means I want to have the same control that I should have had in my family over my husband. I want to apply that emotional on everybody. That's what women's lib means. It means I can act as if it's mine wherever I am. But that's not the right. The point is, as they say, I want to be able to do this work. Fine, you can do that work, but you can't apply the emotional control that goes along with it. That's why Krishna says guna and karma. They have the karma to do the activity. They can be the CEO. They can do all these things. There's nothing that the man's doing the woman can't do. But the point is the by guna, totally unqualified. Totally. I mean, just downright totally. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can say what you want, but there's no exception. Right? There's no dogs that don't bark and slobber. It's just the way it is. You can train them so they don't do it all the time. You know, it's not when you walk in the door, they knock you over and lick your face. Okay, you can train them to not do that, but that's the nature. So this is the problems that go on. So that's the thing about remarriage, is then the woman comes into an already existing family and destroys whatever's there. Right? Now, if a first married woman comes in, that's a whole other thing, because then she'll have her own children that she has to adjust to whoever's there. So there's laws about this. The Shastra talks about these moves. What I'm talking right now is straight out of Shastra. They tell how you come in, how you relate, how you deal with all the different other ladies in the family. Because you have to establish a pecking order. If there's no one there, then you're on the top of the pile. But if you're walking into a situation where there's already women there, you have to fit in. Women don't want to do that. They're for the nuclear families. So the point is, you don't train women, you don't have varnashram. It's that simple. We don't have varnashram today because the women don't want it. It's that simple. It's not because of the men, it's because of the women. Real simple. Right? The man's willing to get out there in the mud and that and live on a farm. The woman doesn't want to get out there. She doesn't want to get her feet dirty. We had dirt paths going from the Goshala to the to the temple. All of everything was dirt, nice, pleasant, you know, like the Parikram path. But when the rainy season, it get a little muddy. Nobody liked getting that mud on their feet. Then they put broken bricks on there. Pointy things that you can't walk on unless you wear shoes. So those who are from the West don't mind wearing shoes everywhere, then they were fine. But anybody who preferred walking barefoot in the dom, they couldn't function. It's a little better now with the asphalt world. And now those people are in ecstasy. And now that's just normal. That's the way things are. But where did that come from? No one wanted mud on their feet. That's not a joke. That's history. That's the history of the Goshala Road. So this is what we're talking about. So if this is not controlled, that you can't function with anything else. People will say, oh, it's this, it's that, we need to do this and that. But it's just like the modern governances, where something's wrong, they're trying to control corruption, but they themselves are corrupt. That's the whole point. So that's why these strong rules. Because you have to remember, women are stronger than men. So if they're not controlled, then everything gets out of hand. Right? That's the point. It's not because women are weaker, it's because they're stronger. If they're weaker, what's the problem? Right? Like that. It's because they're stronger. That's the whole point. So if women, self-realization means women know who women are, then it works. Men know who men are. Men know who women are. Women know who men are. Then in that environment of self-realization, then you can make everything function, and then it'll be what you, then you can experience what's out of Bhagavatam. It's not by time. As we said, it's not archaic. It's in the moment. Because Krishna is eternal, so whatever's going on is in the moment. Motive goodness means the present. Passion means future and past. Modern means it's always in future and past. It's very rarely in the moment. They write books about being in the moment. Right? You know, people talk about it in the moment. Who's in the moment? Unless you're in the mode of goodness, you're not in the moment. Right? Only under extreme things. A few people, right? A couple of people that win the Olympics, a couple of people who win the national or you know, how you say, world things in you know, some kind of sport or some other thing like that. The chess guys, there's a good chance. Well, they're always in thinking in the future. As soon as they see the piece move, then they're thinking 30 moves ahead, right? You know? So we're sitting there, and you know, the guys are just sitting there, so boring, but it's just like intense passion is happening, you know?
I heard they use 6,000 calories on a match, these...
I would expect.
High grade. It's incredible.
You need a lot of... calories. Yeah. If you think about it, have you ever seen a fat chest?
No,
that's
super fit.
No. But even if they eat, they couldn't get, because they're thinking. So you burn more calories with your brain than you do with your body. Like that. Does that make sense? So in other words, there's a lot more happening here. So Prabhupada's just saying, start here. That the boys and girls have to be married, make this age difference like that. Someone was telling me the other day that they just worked out with all their little, the MRIs and all these things that they do and stuff, that girls' brains come to full maturity, when they're 10. But the boys' brains take another 10 years before they come to maturity. So at 20, it comes to maturity. Does that make sense? That's why the recommendation of 10 years difference, because otherwise, then the girl's, you know, her brain is adult maturity at 10. 10-year-olds can talk about marriage, wedding, details, what color house they want, what kind of toilet they want, what their toilet paper is going to look like. And the boy couldn't care less. He gets to that later age, then he starts to think about these things. That's why that gap. That's why the girls always think the guy's a bit of a dweeb, you know? So once they get to university, and that's even your second year, third year, then they start to get real. But you never hear of, you know, the first and second years, that they're very serious. The third and fourth, and then they say, why? Because then only their brain became mature. And then we'll say, oh, this is an archaic thing, or this and that. No, it's the only reason girls go after boys of the same age, because they stay in the class with them the same age, you know, for 12 years, or actually for 20 years. But otherwise, if it was more of a mix like that, the girls would always go after older boys. Because they're mature, they can do things. That's the guy that can get the house, not the guy that's the same age. So that's why it's recommended. Like that. Okay, if the girl's, you know, how you say, above 20, okay, if she marries someone the same age, it'll work. But then it's recommended. Good, there's 3 years difference. You know, that's the minimum recommended. But if they're below that, the problem is he hasn't matured until he's 20. So that's the whole point. That's why these things are there. They're just that, and then we'll say, oh, this, but then we say, I can quote the first. Then we'll think about it. Oh, okay, then it's got some substance. No, Krishna already knows this. And if you observe and see, you know what I'm saying, then you can see how the mentalities work. And then it's not a problem. Does that make sense? So it's very big. But Prabhupada's just giving these two things. Just see that they're married at the proper time, and that they don't interact with each other until they're married. If they do interact, get them married. Right? And that there's no divorce. If you do that, and people are thoughtful and want to accomplish that, then everything else will fall into place because Shastra already recommended it. But until these are in place, people, because these aren't in place, then devotees will say, oh, we don't care about that, we don't care about this, we don't, all these things. You know, same with that. So that gets rid of the illicit connection, right? The first one gets rid of makes the austerity, right? And now this third one, then that was charity, right? Third, the citizens of the state must give in charity up to 50% of their income for the purpose of creating a spiritual atmosphere in the state or in human society. Both individually and collectively, right? So in the state or in human society. So they're giving to something within human society, they're giving to something within the state, they're giving to something, right? That there's some benefit. Now, the higher the benefit, it means it's spiritual, you get the maximum benefit. On the side, you're taking care of the poor people. You understand? In other words, why are there so many poor people? Is it because just normally there's poor people?
No, because the others, they get much more.
Yeah, because the others take more, and they don't give in charity. So the whole point is that they were doing things and taking care, then it would work better. Mm. So you wouldn't have that. It means you're always going to have someone who misuses money is going to be poor. Right? But it'll be less. Mm-hmm. The point is if you only have people that are rich and poor, the rich people are most likely going to misuse it. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's all. So the emerging middle class means you're just going to have more poor people in the future. That's why it emerges and then disappears. Does it disappear? The emerging middle class, and then suddenly you have this huge amount of really rich people and then a small amount of poor people. Does it ever work like that?
No,
the emerging middle class comes from the poor, comes up, gets wealthy, and then goes back, merges back into the poor. Why? Because you have more people misusing money. That's all. You misuse your money, you become poor. You use it properly, you don't become poor. Right? These old traditional families that everyone says, oh, they're so archaic, they've been rich for 400 years and they're still rich. Why? Because they don't misuse money. People that I know that really have money, always have had money, then there's one thing that's interesting about them. When it comes to dealings and ordinary dealings, they're so careful about their money. They go out, they buy something. There's something cheaper. They buy that. And you're thinking, why would he buy that? He's got so much money.
That's why. Yes.
And one time I asked, I said, why is it you have so much money? Why are you worried about that, you know, over this, you know, one rupee on this thing? And then he looked, turned and looked at me. He says, that's why I have money. Because I never waste it. So you add up all those little wastes. You have money. Right? And so then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, makes sense. And so, but when they do spend money, they spend it good. They have a wedding, they spend a crore of rupees on the wedding. Like that. That wasn't Freudian, was it? Just thinking of the daughter's wedding, a crore of rupees. Just close intimacy. Yeah. That, fortunately, as devotees, we don't have to socially impress everybody. That's the they spend a crore because they want to impress the other guys. Not that it's required.
Yeah, there's recently one who spent a crore of pounds.
No, that's
in England.
No. It's good, but it's more for social.
Yeah,
it's not that he was, and if you check, it's not that he gave, you know, a huge amount, hundreds of thousands to the Brahmins.
No,
it's only for a show.
This is strictly Bollywood.
Okay. They should preach the principles of Bhagavatam by A, karma yoga, or doing everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. B, regular hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam from authorized persons or realized souls. C, right, authorized means someone who's in the parampara. Then if you have those within that who are more realized, better. But at least someone who's coming in parampara. Right? C, chanting the glories of the Lord congregationally at home or at places of worship. Right? So either, however it works, whatever you can do. D, rendering all kinds of service to Bhagavatas engaged in preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And E, residing in a place where the atmosphere is saturated with God consciousness. If the state is regulated by the above processes, naturally there will be God consciousness everywhere. So he probably is giving these three things that will adjust the whole. We're thinking how to practically apply. That's what Prabhupada says. You can do it very quickly and easily. We always look at some other system. No, this is all you have to do. Three things. Right? They're big three things, but the point is they got to be big if they don't work. Right? So they're going to work by these will make everything else function. Right? Yes?
But in the devotee society, it needs just a little adjustment.
Just a little adjustment.
Why it, over those years, still not functioning?
It's just a matter of understanding what you're doing and the importance. Right? In other words, if there's attachment to the modern, it means you have to oppose the Vedic. And the problem is the modern has never worked. So what's the point of supporting it? You know what I'm saying? Apply the Vedic in a contemporary environment. That's fine. But don't say we don't need to apply the Vedic. It's archaic or it's Indian. That's cheating. Right? That's just downright cheating. Because here, this all works. Right? Residing in a place where the atmosphere is saturated with God consciousness. So that means you either have to be in the holy dom, you have to be in a temple, or you have to be in a community where this is going on, or in your home where this is going on. Right? Something, you have to be in a place where this is going on. Right? But for some, it's just, I'm in my home, this is my place, I do what I want, you know? I go to the temple when I want to be spiritual. You know, or I invite people over, but you know, it's not an uncommon point. So then, who's living in the spiritual place? Why is that there? Rendering all kinds of service to Bhagavatas, engaged in preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. As long as no one else sees their picture, as long as you don't give them money, as long as you don't, you know, give them nice food, don't like this and that, because we're protecting them from falling down, as if you're not already fallen in the first place, right? You know, so then. You know, how does someone fall and protect someone who's not fallen? Right? Because if there's a mentality, you're already fallen. There's no question. So then, you know, here's all those things, and then how is that like that? Right? Chanting the glories of the holy name congregationally at home or in places of worship. Okay, we do, but most of the time it's show up for Janmashtami, for Shad, not for the church. Right? Harinam, hey, we don't want to do that. It's too weird for the karmis, right? So then there's no congregation. You know, so then? So that's the whole point. Where does it come from? And what's breaking all these down? The modern viewpoint. That's the whole thing. And where does that, I mean, and that's always, of course, been there, but where does it get its strength? From the modern academy.
Yes.
That's where it gets its strength. Or so-called strength. Like that. Its real strength comes from Kali Raj himself, don't worry. Like that. But that's where it was there. Regular hearing of Bhagavatam from authorized persons or realized souls, if people are doing this. Most people go to the temple, you know, on Sunday morning. Maybe they'll hear the class. Right? You know, are they listening in their home to classes? Are they listening to lectures? Are they reading themselves? Are they having classes at their own house or in the community? These are the things. Oh, no, we don't want to get fanatic. We have to be practical. You know, we're going to work. You understand? So the whole point is, what breaks it down, this modern concept that the modern society will give one security and safety. But how can a lotus leaf give a drop of water shelter? Right? It's never happened. But if it didn't work for Caesar, I mean, that's a powerful guy. And he was a, you know, what do you call it? A people's man. You know, he was more of a liberal, more on the, you know, the a democratic, that kind of leaning. He wasn't the conservative side. It didn't work for him. It didn't work for Napoleon. You know, he was also very much, that was one of the first, that's where they first saw him or noticed him. The first story about Napoleon is he's walking down a road and he sees a guy engaging some laborers. And they're trying to move something very heavy, and it's not happening. They can't quite move it. But the supervisor is sitting there. And he goes by and says, what kind of supervisor are you? He says, you want this to happen. You want to see it's happening. You're supposed to see it gets done, not watch it. And then he got down there, and he showed by that one more person, you could move it. That's the first story of Napoleon. Right? So he was also there with the people, out there with the people. He wasn't sitting back, you know, in Versailles and, you know, just enjoying himself while the troops were out. He was right there on the front. It didn't work for him either.
He had a lot of followers after he was
dead. Yeah, of course. It's how did he get out, right? He didn't get out just because, you know, no one helped him. So the whole point is these are people who are successful, are powerful, have the money, have everything. And it's still, the material world kicks them in the teeth. So the whole point is that's what the material world's going to do. So the whole point is, do you have a backup plan? So that backup plan is Krishna consciousness. So if you're not cultivating at the same time, you know, it's just like you're working, you're getting your money, you're living. But if you're not putting something away, then when that falls apart, because that will fall apart, then you don't have anything. So if you're not developing Krishna consciousness at the same time, it will be lost. It's simple. Like that. These are real practical. So when someone says, I'm being practical, Prabhu, yes. So take that practical and take it a step further. Why you're stopping where they're stopping. That's, you know, yes, see that the material goes nicely, but also you should put as much energy into seeing the spiritual goes nicely, not switch one for the other. Yes.
I think this is the dilemma for a lot of devotees who come to Krishna consciousness and thinking that ISKCON is going to provide it for you. When actually ISKCON, which is meant to be Brahmanical and provide sangha and hearing, chanting, doesn't provide anything else.
No. I mean, if you're living a Brahminical lifestyle, it can. See, it's like before, it's not that you didn't have hundreds of people in a temple and it was going fine. Like LA had 500 people. Other temples had 200, 300, 150. It wasn't uncommon. And everyone was being taken care of as long as they lived as simple a lifestyle as that the temple could provide. But when they started running, you know, their own house, they wanted their own car, they wanted insurance, and they wanted dental. That was the straw. The dental was like, you know, that's what wiped it right out. Right, you know, I saw it once, it was an ad in one of these, you know, ISKCON kind of magazines. It was talking about an ad for a temple president's opening. Right? So you could be a temple president somewhere. And it was mentioned there. You got dental. You know, like that. You know, so, okay, yeah. I want to be a president. So then it went on fine. But when people wanted more than what is the Brahminical lifestyle, they wanted to live the modern middle class lifestyle, then that's when you got to go do it yourself. then temples actually just had to let go. And it wasn't the temple was, it was only going to let those ones go, and the ones that could live the Brahminical lifestyle they would keep. But then the ones that had been let go, they were saying, why are you keeping them? Why not us? They couldn't. They could make no differentiation between someone who was willing to live a Brahminical lifestyle and someone who wasn't.
But most of the temples today have to pay the devotees to be served.
Yeah, well, that's a sad thing.
And then the devotees will shift out.
You know, it'd be cheaper to pay karmas.
Krishna consciousness.
It'd be cheaper to pay karmas. You know, they just come in, wash the pots, and leave.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Yeah. It's sad. It's sad. So the whole problem is just, you know what you need, reduce it down to that, and it's only that. Because there are still people willing to be brahmacharis, so the temple should only be that. They run the place, and that's all. But the problem is everybody else wants to control, wants to, so that's the whole thing, is these modern concepts come in. And once they come in, they ruin everything. Because the point is modern means not Vedic. Vedic means what works. So what does modern mean by, you know, natural, by the system of logic? It means what doesn't work. They'll say it works, but is it working? Right? Can they say it works? America's how old? A little over 200 years. Can you say that really works? Right? You know? So that's the whole thing. So, you know.
Mark?
Yes?
Attachment to the modern, is that based on antagonism towards the Vedic?
Means attachment will just be natural because that's your latest conditioning. But to maintain it despite all odds, that will be, then it will develop, you have to develop inimical. There's no such thing as neutral. That's the point. The jiva can't remain neutral. If he could remain neutral, we'd still be sitting in the spiritual world, you know, making cow dung paddings or something. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out is that the soul can't remain neutral. It has to be progressing towards Krishna or it will be going away. So that's the thing. You either have to be trying to understand the Vedic, because the Vedic is non-different from Krishna, right? Then you will go towards. If not, you'll have to go away. So that's the thing. We think, I'm doing this as my, because I'm a free thinker. That's why I'm opposing the Vedic. No, it's because you're bound by the modes of nature. You're forced to do this. But their false ego won't allow that. So what to do? That's why false. That's why pride is, you know, pride, illicit sex, and what was the third thing? You know, these three.
Yes.
If you get rid of those, then you can follow the four of the principles,
yes,
and follow the Vedic culture nicely. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Yes.
For example, these three points, you know, it's general principle. You know, the
general principle. You can apply them anywhere.
In any religion also.
In any religion, in any society, even in tribal society. Mm-hmm. If most tribal societies don't allow illicit sex.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have to be married. You know, I think it's, what is it, maybe the, I can't remember where they're from, but one group of aboriginals, that means they can never touch each other, but on the night before the marriage, they can sit next to each other and touch the tops of their heads. Like that. No, nowhere else. So they're all nice. They're like that. Like that. So somehow or another, it's just that they give some excitement. Good, but the next morning is their marriage. But you know, it's just not allowed. It's just they you can't do things outside that's not allowed by the standard for the tribe. So it's not that these things are, these are a weakness of so-called modern educated men. Right, because they're not going to eat meat unnecessarily. It's just like the American Indians in the Midwest. So they didn't know farming, and so the farmland just grew grass, and the bison ate the grass, and they ate the bison. Right, I think it was farther east and south. Then they understood farming. There were ones that understood farming, so they grew a lot of their things. You know, still the turkeys didn't survive, but other than that. But then when white man came out there and for fun, for sport, just started shooting hundreds of buffaloes a day, they couldn't figure it out. Why would you kill something you're not going to eat? So their point is you only kill it if you're going to eat it. Otherwise, you protect the place. You know, you make it nice, you know, you keep it nice. Like that, like the Aboriginals, I think, in Australia. I think other places do it also. They would regularly burn the place because they knew that after a certain amount of time, if you don't burn it, things don't grow nicely. Mm. So they just felt, I'm just taking part in the overall thing, you know. So there was actually, you know, good understanding, yes.
There's a report from a soil scientist in Brazil that the Indians there, they grew the soil, which was like 40 centimeters to 2 meters deep of black soil, just by doing the continuous rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah. The scientific paper was on.
Yeah. And these are tribals, you know, so-called unsophisticated, uneducated. Yeah. But they get more than what the modern scientist gets.
Yes.
So that's the sad thing. Why? Because they're only doing what's left over that they learned from the Vedic culture, that's all. Because that's what the farmers would do. And so they caught those few points, and then they're doing that, that's all. It's not that they got it from somewhere else. That's the whole thing. Anything that works comes from religion, because religion means the science of what works. That's what religion means. Right? But people just take the sentiment aspect of it, you know, or the arta aspect of it. They don't take the aspect of it. Yes?
Maharaj, to pray to the pujaris or different devotees in the temple for services cannot be called also like maintenance of the...
Point is, the temple takes care. Before, you didn't worry about it because prasad was there, you had a place, they'd give you stuff. It's just like Prabhupada. When he went to India, when he come back to the West, what was in his suitcase? Saris. Right? How many temple presidents you know go, when they come to India, they take back saris and stuff for the girls? Huh? Okay, you know one. Okay, so that's one out of 400. Okay, 399 to go. Okay, we're getting somewhere. Okay. You understand? So the whole point is these things do it. You know what they need. So you just get it. You get some opportunity. You're out. You see somebody. You come across somebody. You know, hey, he can, he does kitchens like that. Okay, so can you do some stuff for our grihasthas, you know, at a minimal price? And then, you know what I'm saying? So you take care of those who are full-time temple. But that means they're full-time. Right? Because that's all they're doing. The temple takes care. Part-time, they can come and do it for free. Right? Because they're already maintaining themselves. And full-time, then the temple takes care. But then they should see these things. And as you get, you grow. You don't sell places. You keep it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You sell it, you have no space. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that if everybody's working on that, then you take care of it. The point is no, it's all for free, so everyone should function for free. You know, and if they cost money, oh, we can't take care. So who's going to stay? You know, that's it. They're there, you take care of them. They get sick, you take care of them. You know, you don't want to take care of them, then don't take them on. Take only how many people you're willing to take care of. So if that's 3 people, keep 3 people. You know? Like that. It works very easily. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a matter of understanding the culture. You understand the culture, it works. You don't understand the culture, it doesn't work. Then you require all these modern rules and meetings and get-togethers and that still don't really work. But they're a little bit better than nothing at all. But if you just follow the Vedic culture, you automatically took care of everybody. Right? You know? The person who has servants, right? Because the servants before would live at your place, or they would come and spend the whole day. That's all they did. So when you got new furniture, they got the old furniture.
Yes.
Right? Because if you're dealing with some standard, when it gets a little worn, it's too old. Right? So you don't sell it, you give it to the servants. So now for them, that's way better than what anybody in their community has.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so for them it's great. You understand? So all these little details, that the servants are fed before the family's fed, means that the husband and wife. You know? All these things that, you know, you're monitoring that, just what are the scraps at the end. and therefore then that's why they revolt.
Hmm.
You know, it's just facts. It's just math. It's straight science. Does that make sense? So the thing is, if it's understood, devotees accept it, then you can start trying to work it out. But devotees say, oh, we tried that, it didn't work. My challenge is, they never tried it. Attitude, maybe. The technique, they didn't know. Yeah. You know, Prabhupada would show them, and then we'd do what we thought. You know, but it takes time to get technique down. Like that. But giving up the attitude and not trying, that doesn't solve it. If you have the interest but not the skill, learn the skill. So, yes.
And a regular thing that if we're not up to the standard, we tend to drop even lower.
Yes. Whatever standard you set, they'll always function less than that. That's what we've always seen. It's like in training the boys, if they only have exactly what they need, then when they get out of the school, they'll expand that a little bit more. But if you allow them in the school to have tons of stuff and what they don't need, then when they get out, it's insane. So you set the standard, people will always be trying to function below the standard. You know. But if you have a high standard, like we used to have before, is that boys from here that we would consider were not necessarily your most dynamic, you know, like your leaders and things like that. So they were kind of the middle, you know, middle rung, like that. When they would go out to temples, like that, their service attitude was twice as much as their best man.
Yeah.
You know? Like that, just because you set such a high standard. In other words, the standard is you want people who can be leaders of ISKCON. So naturally you'll have followers. So those people who were followers, they'd be better than the others, or they would be leaders in a smaller environment, because we'd run a bigger environment. But, you know, if you have 100 people, and that, how many temples have 100 people? You know, but if you have one with 25 or 10, they can be a leader.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing. You set a higher standard, and then everybody comes out good.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point.
Okay.
Gambling of all description, even speculative business enterprise, is considered to be degrading. And when gambling is encouraged in the state, there is a complete disappearance of truthfulness. Allowing young boys and girls to remain unmarried more than the above mentioned ages, and licensing animal slaughterhouses of all descriptions should be at once prohibited. The flesh eaters may be allowed to take flesh as mentioned in the scriptures and not otherwise. So either you have a sacrifice with all the mantras and that, or you let it die and then eat it. Intoxication of all description, even smoking cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or the drinking of tea must be prohibited. Because then it's just you get used to that, you get dependent upon that. Does that make sense? And so, and then we saw before, intoxication creates anxiety. Like that. Right?
Yes.
And you see, coffee drinkers, and they're generally in anxiety.
Yes. Yes. And they're more tired.
Yeah. Then they use it to keep up to that thing, but then when it goes down, then anxiety comes back. So they do still experience anxiety. That's the thing. So one has to be very careful. Yes.
But how to force, for example, people to get married at this age?
Well, he's just pointed out, girls are happy to get married at that age.
Yes.
The point is girls are happy to get married at that age. And boys, if they're kept separate from girls, then depending on who they are, at earliest 16, then they can't function anymore. And if they're very qualified, then at 25 they come out. So in other words, if you shoot for 25, then, you know, you get, you know, some coming out at 16, some 18, some 20, some 22, like that. But if you say it's younger, it's because the funny part is in any state, what they have it, the girls can always get married younger than the boys.
Yeah.
Like most like states, boys have to be 18, but girls can be 16, some even 15, depending upon, well, you know, what state, what country. So it's always because, like we said, they're already mature. That's the whole point. So that means technically they're of adult maturity from 10. right? Not physical maturity, but that, so generally, if they have father and he has affection and they grow up nicely, they don't hit physical maturity until 14. Right? That's fairly standard. But if they don't have the father and that, then it's younger and younger, even down to 9. So generally, if a girl hits that maturity at 9, then that means there is no male figure in the family.
Yes.
So in other words, if there isn't one, she's going to get one herself.
Yes.
Right? You know, so that's how it works. Right? So it's just how it functions. So the girl is, it means if we look about it, the boy is that this girl, that girl, you know, something like that, and it didn't work out. He's not bothered really. It's very rare the boy is bothered, but the girl at 13, the boy, you know, it didn't work out. She's devastated.
Yes.
Because what does that mean? She's devastated. Why would she be devastated?
Because she wanted to marry her.
Yeah, because the idea is that it would last.
There's a need.
Yeah, of course. So the point is that need, they want to last, they want all these different things to happen, because there's not a problem actually for them. And maybe they wouldn't think about getting married at that time, but they'd want that relationship, having started at 13 or whenever it started, 12, to last until they did get married. So then that point is that's what it says. At 16, then it works good. You know, she's trained, she's mature, she has experience. Like that. And, you know, one of these modern girls, while they dress, it means in there, I mean anything. If you take someone, wherever they excel in their area, whether Vedic or non-Vedic, you can't tell the difference between a 16-year-old and someone in their late 20s. Just on what they can do, how they can act. It means they know how to, it means the one Vedic, she knows how to run the house, the other one knows how to wrap a man around her finger. You know. So that's the whole point. 16, they're already expert. So that's why that age. Yes. Now, the point is they have to be trained.
Yes.
So when does the training start? From when they're small. Actually, from Garbhodhan. Actually, from the parents getting married. It keeps going back. So that's how it works out. Yes.
Isn't the point of this girl's reaching maturity faster in Scandinavia, where there's a tradition of equality, there's a tendency that the girls are achieving maturity earlier and earlier?
The girls are reaching earlier?
Yes.
Then, yeah, because there's no masculine influence. When you make the men and women equal, there's no such thing as equal. The woman will automatically be superior. That's why if he's older, he has experience, more things he can do, then you're talking equal. That's the whole point. If he's like that, 6 to 10 years older, then you're talking about equals. But if they're equal age, she's always a bit. So then what's the point? So then that's what's going to happen. It's just that it doesn't work out. But because it's thought that that's the solution, then therefore they keep moving it back. Right? Therefore, you can see, one understands how, at the end of Kali Yuga, that the girl will be a mother. That means she has a baby at 5. It just goes back. Because now we get him down to 9. You only have to go another 5 years. Like that. That's all. So that's, and we've gotten it from 14 down to 9. How many years is that? Right? It's already 5. We're already halfway there. You know? And we still got, you know, how many? 400,000 years to go, and, you know, and we're doing okay. We're quite progressive, as modern progressive society. So that's the whole thing, is there's a science there. They're understanding the science. Then you can introduce it, you know, bit by bit, slowly, slowly, until it all fits in. But if you don't understand the science, this whole idea is that it doesn't matter. It's never going to work. You know what I'm saying? Devotees have been talking modern, I mean, effectively since 82, 81. I don't see it. You know, really talking about it mid-90s, I still don't see it. Now they don't talk about it because it doesn't work. But they go on trying to do it. What to do? Okay, does this all make sense here? Now the important thing about this, we're speaking this strongly in that, but it's not from the point of it's Vedic, you know, fanatic. It's about, it's a science. If you don't know the science, it doesn't work. in the modern scientific society, if you go against the scientific rule, it doesn't work. And people accept that. The point is people aren't accepting that the Veda is science. What did Prabhupada call nectar devotion?
Science.
The science of devote bhakti yoga. Right? Now, let's just look at it. In your kind of more contemporary environment, we're talking bhakti rasamrita sindhu. It's about rasa. What would anyone other than Prabhupada call that book? Would they call it the science? No. You understand? They find some nice poetic thing. Prabhupada said the science. Everything's science. And then from science, you apply that, then that's where rasa is. In other words, the tattva is there. If that's applied, you get rasa. So that's the two gopis.
Is that an absolute principle?
If you apply tattva. If you apply it properly, yes.
Because without tattva, rasa doesn't exist.
Tattva is just the real situation is. And rasa is what you gain by interacting in that situation. Does that make sense? So it's just like this, is that, okay, even you, one may say, oh, but what about the gopis? Okay? They're not into tattva, but they just love Krishna. But what's the whole point? We're servants of Krishna. They see themselves as servant of Krishna. That's tattva. Because that's where always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That's the central point of tattva. So who is Krishna? Who are we? What is remembrance? Right? That's what you get. So it just expands from there. So you just get as technical as required to break down our mundane perspective. That's the whole thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's happening. Yes.
Maharaj, could you explain why is that because of the Dharmasham is not there because I don't want to be trained?
There's enough noise, I can't.
Yes.
I couldn't quite catch what you said. Noise meaning behind you. Kids are in the kitchen.
Yeah, okay. Could you please explain what is that
partnership
is not there because women don't want to be trained?
Yes. Okay. See, the whole point is the society has to be female compliant. Right? In other words, what the ladies will allow, that's what goes on. Does that make sense? Right? So, if they appreciate, let's say like samskars. Now the samskar, what is the samskar doing? The samskar is making benefit for the child. Right? Making benefit for the child in the way of intelligence, in the way of health, in the way of stability. You know, a way of digestion, the way of focus, all these different aspects. Women believe that there's going to be a samskar, whether the husband's into it or not. Yes. They're not into it, even the husband's into it, then unless he's really strong about it, you know, and jeopardizes the day-to-day interactions, it doesn't happen. Right? So that's the whole point, is that's the thing. That's how it works. Samskar, you get together, you have people come together, they do things, they dress up, they take prasad. Right? And so then you have that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? If not, then you have to bring in some Western concept and get the whole same thing done. It's called the Saturday market. You understand? Even that took years to establish. But what do you have? People dress up a little bit, go there, hang out, eat, you know, somebody gets out there, you know, the guitar, you know, that kind of jazz. But that's what normally would go on at some scars. Okay? Now, in a kid, there's so many in a year, in the first year. And then how many kids are here?
900.
So there's always some sort going on. There's always something going on. So there's always opportunity for all this social interaction. It's not happening. Saturday market's happening. Why? Because that's accepted, the samskars are not. It's simple. You know, women decide how they dress. Men don't decide. Maybe the father can give some. He can put some pressure, but basically from 11, it's a war, or it's fighting. From 13, it's a war, you know, and then probably from about 15, it's a lost cause. Right? You want to cut your losses and get out when you can, right? You understand? That's just how it works. No? So then it has these aspects. But if the girl wants to dress however she wants to dress, who can say? You know what I'm saying? It's just like here. It's winter time. It means you can only see the girl's face. Okay? But now, if you ask, will she still be attractive? Yes. She makes sure of it. You can only see her face, but she's attractive. But there's this idea when it's not, and why is she doing that? Because it's practical. Because this winter it's cold, so you cover up. Right? If it's a little not cold, where it's enough where you won't die in pneumonia, then you wouldn't wear all that stuff, right? Yeah? Okay. So, sorry. You know? So, but then it's, oh, you have to be more open. Why we have to be restricted? Oh, you know, why can't the girls just be themselves? In other words, how are they going to show their femininity and all that? They did it by just only their face sticking out. So why can't they do it when it's not cold? You know what I'm saying? Feminine nature is feminine nature. Does that make sense? It's just like this. Let us say I take a light bulb, okay? And I put in front of the light bulb a stained glass mirror. Does it look nice? Does it look better if I remove the stained glass and it's just the bulb? Okay, so that's the point. In other words, it's the femininity coming through the arrangement. It's the arrangement that makes the potency of the woman look nice. Right? Because if it was just the woman, why does she need to dress up? Why the makeup? Why the jewelry? If she's so great just like that, then why all these other things? So who decides what is that medium and how they put it together? The women themselves. Now, if you dress really, you know, conservatively, what are the other women going to say? That's the point. So who's breaking it down? The women, not the men. If the man says, oh, you're dressing very conservative, oh, then you can start a whole thing there. You're like, who's this guy? What is he doing? You know, exploiting this and that, right? The same ladies, you know. But if the other ladies say, you know, what is this? You know, I think you're, you know, better than us. They're like this, and then it's like, oh, then they break down. So who's doing it? Who's breaking down the fabric? The men aren't protecting, therefore the women, they follow their own whatever they think will happen. So if the men are creating the environment where one can function in a stable, steady environment, then what's the need? It's just like this. How fancy does the woman dress if she's not sure if she's got the man or not? And how does she dress if she already has the man? And how does she dress if she's totally 100% confident she has the man? Right? Therefore, the high sales of baggy t-shirts and sweatpants. Right? Those are confident women. Right? You understand? So the whole point is no, we have to... The point is how does a woman dress if she's not trying to impress somebody? Head to toe. Isn't it? Even the hands don't stick out. How are the sleeves? They're long. Mm-hmm. What about the bottom? The ankles stick out? No, they drag on the ground. You know, does she wear a tight t-shirt around the house? That's all she sees like that, but she's just really comfortable and relaxed on her own. No, it's baggy, and the baggier the better. So what does that mean? That's the inherent nature. So, if it's different than that, then the women set the standard. If there's community, it's just an example. Another example. In the early, this would be different. Would be the, when in the, I think in the early 1700s or mid 1700s, no, what does it say? Yeah, 1700s, when the British first came over to India. Who came? Just the men. Who were coming, very adventurous, you know, dynamic kind of guys. And they came over, they became part of the scene. They married Indian women. You know, they got titles. They used to work, even though they controlled, they took over places. But the people who were their allies, they would fight for them. They come out with their cannons and that on behalf of one king against somebody else. Mm-hmm. They were part of the scene. Once it was established, right, because the wild kind of, the wild, wild east is not exactly what, you know, the lady's favorite situation. But once it got established, and so they were part of the scene, they spoke the local languages, they followed the customs, they did everything, right? But when it came up to the point where the British women started coming over, because now, where are your good bachelors? They're over there in India. You know, they got money, they got power, they got facility. Right here, you sit in a little house. Over there, you'd be in a palace with servants. So they came over. That's when you started the thing. The British stayed in one part, and the Indians don't go into that area. They started the whole thing of the social differences. You know? So, that's the point. Right. And then, you know, if we were showing the French example, you know, a little bit more finesse there. No. Who said, let them eat cake?
She was from Austria.
Huh?
But
still, she becomes part of the sea. They become part of the sea. Women adjust wherever they are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you look at it, who's from anywhere? You know, French were from farther east. All everybody came in and took over, right? If it means you could say, what is it, Normandy or Brittany? They're left over from the Celts. So you could say, in one sense, for that land, they're the French, but they're not. They're Celts, like that. The French were the Gauls, right? You know, like that. So then they developed it and refined it. You know, you know. So they're, you know, one of the other more sophisticated of the madhouse tribes. You know, yeah, more refined than other Germanic groups. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, it's they set the standard. So that's as quickly as you can take the social. It doesn't mean the spiritual, it means the social. You understand? The spiritual, because the souls are independent, that could be anybody. But the point is in the social, unless the women accept it, it doesn't happen. Of course the men have to be doing it, but the women have to accept it. Does that make sense? Does that work?
Yes. I was thinking maybe was there some training for women that they rejected, so that's why you're saying that.
No, it's women. The bottom line, when it comes to these social things, women are practical, right? So the difficulty comes is then. If it doesn't work for them, they don't get that emotional expansions and stuff like that, emotional interaction, then it's not going to work. So they'll find that place that it comes from. Not that they necessarily prefer this or that. You know, it's like, you know, the comment was made here, she's from Austria, and then, you know, the gentleman, representing the realm said, no, she's French. You know, because the whole point is it's an attitude. So the girl will adjust to any attitude as long as it gives shelter. Does that make sense? For her, it doesn't matter. Otherwise, why is it girls change houses? Boys don't. Boy stays in his house. Girl changes to the other house. Right? Because they adjust. You know, it's just like the girl's moved to the other house. She's taken on that name. And then, you know, 10 years later, someone makes a comment. And, you know, and it's about the name. She says, no, in this family, we do like this. She's only been there 10 years. But she identifies so much. She's talking about, you know, however long that family's there. So you understand? So that's the thing. It's women will adjust to wherever it actually they get the feminine needs. They're the most practical on this level. Men are practical in the mechanics of dealing with machineries, like that. Women are practical when it comes to the emotional. is what gets emotion. Now the point is, due to training, due to availability, they'll take anything, right? So, you know, how you say, an emotional insanity is better than no emotion at all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So fighting's better than no interaction. You know what I'm saying? But if you could have nice interaction, that's better. And then you just fight for variety. Right? Rather than fighting to get it to nice. Right? You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a science. People understand it, try to apply it, it works like a charm. It always has. It always will. You know? And then if you apply the modern, it will always fail as long as it's applied. They could say, no, but in modern society there have been so many examples. But if you look at the examples, they're doing what the Vedas recommend. That's all. It's that simple. Okay. You had something? No. Okay. Thus, the personality of Kali, by the directions of Maharaj Parikit, the son of Uttara, was allowed to live in those five places. Therefore, whoever desires progressive well-being, especially kings, religionists, public leaders, brahmanas, and sannyasis, should never come in contact with the four above-mentioned irreligious principles. Right? So it's with the principles. It doesn't mean that they, you know, didn't happen to walk down that street. But you can, you know, if there's another street, why not go around, right? You know. In his purport to verse 41, Srila Prabhupada describes the four leaders of society and their characteristics. The brahmanas are the religious preceptors for all other castes, and the sannyasis are the spiritual masters for all the castes and orders of society. So also are the king and the public leaders who are responsible for the material welfare of all people. The progressive, when you get into public leaders, that's when you get into the democratic element. Right, the democratic concept works in this realm, like that. So there will be a public leader that is elected, like that. And he takes care of the day-to-day, down on the village level, people's lives stuff. But once you get up into the higher, then it's kings, brahmins, and sannyasis. Yes. You know, it's not... You know, it's not, they're not that. There, it's purely by qualification. The other is the people feel that this guy's done something, but it's at that level. It's in a level where you can see. And the point is you can say, what's the difference between that and something higher? Is that you're going to bump into that guy because he's taking care of your village or a few villages right there. So he's going to bump in. He's there on the street. He's not really much different than you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? He's got his own little business. He runs his own little thing. Yes. And then he's part of the scene there. You know, whatever he's doing. It could be a local Brahmin, and you can talk to him and tell him, hey, you're not doing very well. In fact, everyone's going to tell him that. Yes. Right? It's a village. That's what village means. You know? You understand? So it works at that level. So then if they don't like it, then it's either he gets it together or they get someone else. Does that make sense? So it works on that level, but it has its limit. When it gets to the top level where you're not dealing with it, you're not there to talk, it doesn't function. Then it has to be qualification, and then those who are within the leadership circle, they know how to pick others of that level. But the point is they combine. The public leaders interact with these others. And so therefore, between the two, then the citizens are taken care of. So it works very nicely. So these are the leaders.
Why can't we introduce the system on the temple level, since the temple president is always with the devotees of a delegate?
You can probably mention that there is a system to do that, but then you have to have the other things in place to be able to do that. Otherwise, then the people become crazy. And when the people become crazy, then those who organize it like that, it doesn't work out well for them. Robespierre in point. Right? So that's the difficulty. Is that unless the other three are in place, then it doesn't work. But technically, you could say is that you could do it at that level, or the temple president is like the king. You know. So it just depends on what you're doing, especially if you're talking about community. If it's just a temple and that, then that's one thing. But when you have these bigger things in community, then it becomes more like that. So then the local community will have their leaders. Naturally, who's got more money, who's older, who has more wealth, you know, and talks louder than everybody else, these are the guys that will naturally be your leaders. But at the temple level, it's better. It's they're put in there by who's above them. You know, GBC, the other, like that. You know, it should be confirmed with the senior men. It should be the community's comfortable with it. Because that's how you pick a king. The king means the king should be comfortable. That's why it mentioned Yudhishthir, you know, placed Parikkhita on the throne. That meant he thought it was good. Right? Then, not only that, because Dhritarashtra also thought Duryodhana was good. But then, you have to check with the ministers and the other senior men of the administration. So now, everybody else except Dhritarashtra thought that he was not qualified. And the public, when the Pandavas went to Varanavata, the public was not very pleased with Duryodhana. So that means two out of three is wrong. So that means he's not fit for the king. But now Yudhishthir, then Dhritarashtra knows he's right. All the ministers will 100% agree, and the population will agree. He's the king. So you see that example when Maharaj Uttanapada, I think, put Dhruva Maharaj on the throne. It goes through, it shows those steps and how it was done. So that's how you have to do it. So that comes from the top. But in the community, who's going to speak on behalf of the community, that the community should work out, because they have to represent them. You know, and if it's working nicely, fine. If not, then the king steps in and makes sure it happens properly. In other words, if someone comes up and he's using it to his own advantage and everybody else, then from that authority it has to be removed. And then they pick someone else. Does that make sense? So it can work. But you have to know what the system is. You can't take it and then apply something, applies in one place, apply it in another place. Because it uses similar terminologies or it has a similar kind of thing. Because everything similar came from Krishna. It all exactly works the same way. Like that. Okay. The progressive religiousness and those who are responsible human beings or those who do not want to spoil the valuable human life should refrain from all the principles of irreligiosity. Right? They should. So these are the people. In other words, they're the leaders. And it may be they're the prominents. In Satya Yuga, they're the prominents. So there's a very few not doing this. Treta Yuga a little bit more. Dwapara Yuga a little more, Kali Yuga, you know, quite a bit more. Right? So religionists here will be those who are not, so, you know, means they practice nicely, they have that sentiment nicely, they're strong, they identify with piety, with devotional service, you know, with philosophy. But it's not necessarily their prominence, right? Like that. Right? While the brahmanas, the sannyasis, like this, they're the ones that give the actual right philosophy that has to be always be on that. The religionist may or may not. He may talk from sentiment, just like, does that make sense? Okay. Okay, they should refrain from all the principles of irreligiosity, especially illicit connection with women. Because right? Otherwise, if there's illicit connection with women, then you're going to create Shankar. Shankar is always mixed. That mix is always a problem. Right? Means this thing nowadays, people can't figure out who they are, what they should do. That's Shankar. Right? Means you see people in the, I see little kids. It's like this. It's that he's from a pure business line. You know, 8 years old in school, he's already running a business. You know, and maybe pencils, and maybe, you know, sandwiches, or maybe something. You know, but it's going on. It's happening. You know, like that. If a Brahmin is not truthful, all his claims as a Brahmin at once become null and void. Right? Truthful means specifically that it's all in connection with the Lord. It's based on Shastras, according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra. That's the main. Then, socially, then it should be as close as possible to facts. But the point is in preaching, sometimes you don't touch on the facts too strongly. You know what I'm saying? We're touching strongly in this group, because this point is here it's a regular group, so we've come with all these things have been discussed. Right? Like that. But when you go out where you don't know the group, then you have to be more careful. So it's not about fact, it's about truth. Truth means Krishna. Somebody said, yeah. Similarly, if the king and the public leader are unnecessarily proud or habituated to drinking and smoking, certainly they become disqualified to discharge public welfare activities. Because then the population is going to see them the most. The Brahmin sannyasis, they kind of come through, or they're kind of a little bit, they're there, they're the top, but they're not in your social circle. Right? The kings and these other leaders are in, I mean, they may be the top of your social circle, or closer to your social circle, or within your social circle. So they will set that personal kind of example. Like that. The others will show you what is the ideal. Right? Truthfulness is the basic principle for all religions. The four leaders of the human society, namely the sannyasis, the Brahmin, the king, and the public leader, must be tested crucially by their character and qualification. Before one can be accepted as a spiritual master of society, he must be tested by the above mentioned criteria of character. Such public leaders may be less qualified in academic qualifications, but it is necessary primarily that they be freed from the contamination of the four disqualifications, namely gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter. So they may not be so knowledgeable. That's what you have your Brahmins and sannyasis for, and your kings for. But they still will be able to lead society. Yes. No, it's okay. Therefore, the king reestablished the lost legs of the personality of religion, the bull, and by encouraging activities, he sufficiently improved the condition of the earth. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada states that 50% of the economy dedicated to Sankirtan Yajna is the formula for eradicating Kalki's influence. By designating particular places for the personality of Kali, Maharaj Parikit practically cheated Kali. In the presence of Kali, Dharma in the shape of a bull and earth in the shape of a cow could actually estimate the general condition of his kingdom. And therefore he at once took proper steps to reestablish the legs of the bull, namely austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. And for the general benefit of the people of the world, he saw that the gold stock might be employed for stabilization. Gold is certainly a generator of falsity, intoxication, prostitution, enmity, and violence. But under the guidance of a proper king or public leader, or brahmana or sannyasi, the same gold can be properly utilized to reestablish the lost legs of the bull, the personality of religion. So therefore, in the same thing as if you're working and there are no kings, then you take your public leader up to that position, but it still applies. Right? Still the principle applies. Maharaj Parikit, therefore, like his grandfather Arjuna, collected all illicit gold kept for the propensities of Kali and employed it in the Sankirtan Yajna, as per instruction of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we have suggested before, once accumulated wealth may be divided. Right, so this is illicit, right? So that's used in Sankirtan. So that's what we were saying before, is all this stuff coming in from bad. So one may say, where it comes, even from now, is if you use the stuff that comes in from tax on cigarettes and alcohol and gambling, prostitution, these kind of things, you could do a lot in the way of preaching. You know, then it goes, and then by preaching, these will get less. So then that aspect, then the preaching already goes itself. It needs less funding because more people are doing it, right? You need more funding because less people are doing it. Less funding and more people are doing it. So it naturally balances. The greater the sins, the greater the money for preaching about it. The less the sins, the less need of money for preaching about it. As we have suggested before, one's accumulated wealth may be divided into three parts for distribution. Namely, 50% for the service of the Lord, 25% for the family members, and 25% for first personal necessities. Spending 50% of for the service of the Lord or for propagation of spiritual knowledge in society by way of the Sankirtan Yajna is the maximum display of human mercy. That's why he says up to. Right? If it's less than that, then likely you're making that endeavor. But the point is, if you don't say 50%, then, yes, then you're not even going to get 1%. You know? Yes. Point is that's good. The point is it's done. Rupa Goswami did it. You know, we're talking about what this is, your money. It's not talking about, I still don't know the difference between gross and net. You know, there's gross, net, and then there's profit. Because they're both big, but profit's the small one.
It's the smallest.
Yeah, so, but what's the difference between gross and net?
Gross minus net.
It's the whole amount of money.
Okay, the whole amount, whatever is traveling, means this much money went through the company.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Then the net is after the taxes, everything, this, that. That's the net. And from that, then there is a profit.
Oh, I see, because you might reinvest.
Of course.
I mean, net could be all profit, but generally you would reinvest and expand.
Usually gross.
Oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah. Then you take off your operating expenses. That's just the income without more cost to the money.
That's net. Okay. Finally. Now I understand. I've been asking this question for a long time. Now I've got an answer.
We've
got to talk to the right people.
Right? It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yes.
But you did it good.
No. He didn't catch. What was that money that his brother had? That was from that 25%. Because it says 25% is what you... What did you say here?
Family.
Where were we? Up here?
Second paragraph.
Second paragraph.
Okay. 25% for family members. That means what you run, and 25% for personal necessities. That's for yourself, these things like that. But that's where that's what you stick aside. That's what Rupa Goswami left for Sanatana.
Okay. What I meant is every month, usually we're supposed to give something. So Rupa Goswami only did it once.
No, but you don't. It wasn't discussed what he was doing on a regular basis. It was just that from that money that he had put aside for emergency himself. This is not the family side emergency. This is emergency that the family doesn't know about. You understand? Because in other words, there's a certain amount for family. Then generally, the wife controls that money, and of that, she should see that something's put aside if there are these situations that come up that are unexpected. Does that make sense? But if there's bigger things than that has been put aside separately. Does that make sense? That's the thing. And so, the things that the man needs, he takes out of that, rather than out of the family stuff. Family stuff is whatever the family gives him is what he has. So if he needs more for running business, it comes out of there. And then 50% is what's then given in charity. So that's the, you know, of course, we're talking about more ideal, so therefore people have more wealth. So it makes it easier. But if everybody does this, everybody does have more wealth. You know. So the thing is you do what you can. You know, this is the standard, but the point is it should be divided into these three. And therefore, then you have. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So there's a difference in that emergency and other emergency. In other words, it's not an emergency that's not quite enough for the ticket to go to Bali. That comes out of the family emergency. That doesn't come out of this other emergency. That is for real emergency. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. P. People of the world are generally in darkness regarding spiritual knowledge, especially in regard to the devotional service of the Lord, and therefore, to propagate the systematic transcendental knowledge of devotional service is the greatest mercy that one can show this world. Right? So he's saying is spending this much on Sankirtan, that's the maximum mercy one can be functioning at. Right? So, because Sankirtan is the greatest mercy. In other words, if you're giving a charity, this is always your preferred, something that's it's connected with the preaching. It doesn't mean that other charities aren't there, but this is always a very important element. When everyone is taught to sacrifice 50% of his accumulated gold for the Lord's service, certainly austerity, cleanliness, and mercy automatically ensue. And thus, the lost three legs of the personality of religion are automatically established. Because you have to be austere to do that. You know, to doing that, then you have less stuff around the house. You can be cleaner. Right? Yeah. When there is sufficient austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, naturally Mother Earth is completely satisfied, and there is very little chance for Kali to infiltrate the structure of human society. Then what's there is greater. You know, like that, you know, it's just, yeah. It's interesting that, how you say, just to show how the Earth things drop, you know, what she provides, is that it's a contemporary element. There's this one kind of wheat called spelt, right? So before that was used a lot because people worked very hard, right? Mm-hmm. It was just a common thing. But if you're not working so hard, there's finer with the wheat that we use now, like that. But it's dropped so much that now people who sit around an office all day can eat spelt and just maintain themselves nicely. Because before, if you ate spelt and you didn't go out and work, you'd have problems. So in other words, what does that mean? We say, oh, this is high in protein, high in this and that. No, it's actually the spelt is kind of normal now. Before it was like way beyond. Spelt was meant for, you know, workhorses. You know, just like horses eat oats, right? So what does that mean? What are oats for?
Horses.
Doing work, yeah, for horses, right? You understand? So that's the thing. These higher end things are meant for doing a lot of physical work. But the point is things have dropped so much that you have to go to these high end things just to get, you know, regular stuff. Yeah.
That's how it is?
Yeah.
The devotees, they have porridge in the morning, they don't fall asleep all day.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's just like let's say, just to give an example, the local thing. The local thing is they have this thing called pantabat, which is the rice from the night before you soak overnight, and then in the morning they eat. It's very cooling on the system, extremely cooling. And then some, like in Orissa, they'll put some yogurt into that, even make it more. If you want to have fun, you make a little chance and throw it in there also. So in much of India, this is an extremely popular preparation that probably most don't even know about. But basically every culture has it in India. So now the thing is if you eat this, you have two options, work or sleep. there isn't a third option. You know? So that's the thing, it's common like that. So otherwise, then you have to eat extremely small. You know, if you want to just, for taste, then it's just like, you know, it's just like a, you know, the Gujaratis, they eat so many things all day, so, you know, you get some doklas, they eat one dokla, max two dokla, that's it. You know, give us some doklas, you know, you eat 10, 20 of them, right? But they just like that. So if you do that, then you can survive. But otherwise, yeah. So these things are heavy, so then they just, that's where you go. For in this kind of environment, you can't eat like that. Like that. We switched our diet back in the 90s, because otherwise we were running on standard ISKCON kind of diet. It just doesn't work for classes. And yes.
But in the cold environment, that
cold environment, fine, because you're burning that. So that's fine. You know, so over there, hey, you know, that therefore up north, and it's muesli. It's muesli's a northern food, you know. And then on top of that, they put that funny stuff. It's kind of like, it's not yogurt, but it's some kind of funny milk curdled. It's some really wild stuff. Really weird. And it's condensed. You know, it's like, it's wild. And then they put that in there, you know, along with whatever else they can get their hands on. Yeah. And then rye bread on the side, and, you know, it's wild. But it's so cold, it works. Okay. The most fortunate Emperor Maharaj Kali, most fortunate Emperor Maharaj Parikit, how did they get Emperor Kali? Where is the word Kali here? So we're still talking about Kali, right? Okay. The most fortunate Emperor Maharaj Parikit, who was entrusted with the kingdom of Hastinapur by Maharaj Yudhishthira, when he desired to retire to the forest, is now ruling the world with great success due to his being glorified by the deeds of the kings of the Kuru dynasty. Right? Being glorified by the deeds of the kings. So he's glorified because of the deeds. That means he's doing. So he's doing these great things. That's why everything's running so smoothly. Right? Maharaj Parikit, the son of Abhimanyu, is so experienced that by dint of his expert administration and patronage, it has been possible for you to perform a sacrifice such as this. In other words, because he's doing this, then these sacrifices can go on. Otherwise, how can the sages sit in the forest and do a sacrifice and not be doing something else? Right? Because, one, it's a protected environment. Two, there's so much prosperity. People are giving in charity and that, so then they're able to function. Srila Prabhupada writes, the brahmanas and sannyasis are expert in the spiritual advancement of society, whereas the kshatriyas, or the administrators, are expert in the material peace and prosperity of human society. That's where you have to... They're expert in the material peace and prosperity, right? Not in management, right? That's not where the focus... The focus is not management. You use management to create peace and prosperity. Right? Does that make sense? It's not wealth, it's prosperity. They're different. You say something's prosperous, you're talking about the whole mentality, the culture, the whole lifestyle. Wealth is just you have money. There's a difference.
Management is secondary?
Management is support. Everybody uses management. This thing is that management is the pinnacle. The housewife manages the house. Why is it clean? She managed it. People are coming over. It's clean. There's something to eat. It looks good. Everybody's dressed nice. You know, the husband and kids have taken a bath. How did that happen? She managed it. You understand? So this idea that it's you know, management is the pinnacle and all that, it's not. Management is to get the point here is material peace and prosperity. That's what a kshatriya does. Brahmins and kshatriyas manage to create spiritual advancement. Vaishyas manage to create wealth, right? And then that wealth being distributed, then is able to do that. Shudras manage to create, you know, the expression of their arts. Right? Then the whole thing works. Both of them are pillars of all happiness, and therefore they are meant for full cooperation for common welfare. Right? So, yes. Maharaj Parikit was experienced enough to drive away Kali from his field. Right, so he could take material peace and prosperity as pillars, or you could say the Brahmins and Sannyasis and the administrators, these are the two pillars. Maharaj Parikit was experienced enough to drive away Kali from his field of activities and thereby make the state receptive to spiritual enlightenment. Right? The field of activities is what is within your, what you have control over. Right? That's your field. If you don't have control over it, it's not your field. Right? So then he's able to do that, the Kali's not there. Then, if the common people are not receptive, it is very difficult to impress upon them the necessity of spiritual enlightenment. Right? Therefore, you have to create those who are expert in the science of spiritual advancement. They will then work on that public till they are progressive. Them being progressive, then we see the society can work nicely, right? But at the same time, you have to be working with the administration to make that happen. But if that's not the focus, it won't. But it's until you get the public, that's when it works very well. right? That's why it says a Brahmin or king, they shouldn't go to places that are, that's too overrun by those who are not interested, you know, in spiritual life. Mm-hmm. That. Okay. We'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Sarvadvaita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Jai Gaurav. It's interesting, when it hits these social things, we slow down. It hits some more philosophical.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because on philosophy, we don't have many questions. Right?
That's just philosophy. I mean.
Yeah.
Some social issues. That's
social.
Jesus.
And looks like he's gone.
Yeah.
Can't get
better than that. No, it's a pretty good way to go.
Like the rocks, right?
This fissure region.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make the point during the class, but I have some attachment to, you know, the Viking heritage. And you mentioned Normandy. That was basically, it was run by Vikings.
Yes, like that. I think Brittany was... Okay, Normandy is the Celt. I mean, is the Norsemen. So that means Brittany is the Celts.
Probably.
Okay.
Because the Vikings, they were ravaging Normandy. And then at one point they asked one of the tribes, you know, if you stay there, just keep the others away. So they got, you know, a place at the entrance of Saint. And then they stayed there. And, you know, they were the ones that eventually went to conquer England after the other Vikings that left England. So it's basically a Viking thing.
Okay. Good. Because I know it was one or the other, I couldn't remember the name. Because there was one here, who was it in China? Krishna Balaram? Krishna Balaram's wife.
Swasti.
She's from Britain.
Yeah, she's from Britain.
Yeah. Because she says that there's some, the way they talk, and there's certain things that are a little bit different from other parts of France.
Yes.
They have their own elements. I think they even had their own language.
Yes.
And it was taught in the schools. I don't know if it still is, but up to it. And that same language is there, like in Wales, Ireland, and there's other places where that same language is there.
Common.
Yeah.
Same roots.
Yeah, same roots. So Brittany, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, they all have the same roots. While England, that will be, like you said, coming from Normandy. Vikings and Denmark. Because the Danes came in, they were getting too much, so then they brought in the Angles and Saxons to control the Danes. And then I think the Vikings came in from there and took over. So it's very much, you know, from that side. But these other three places, they're different, never really related as much, because they were from that original Celtish background. But that's all the left, but otherwise, from what I understand, they were the whole, most of Europe,
yeah.
The Celts. But they were, as the Germans came in, they kind of went back, and those were the only places that were left.
But England only got their things together after the Vikings, they came there. Before it was kind of tribes and everything.
They were always fighting with each other.
Exactly,
like
but when the Vikings were there, it's like, okay, we got to get at these ports, you know, and then, you know, they got the thing together.
Yeah. Still think the War of the Roses was after that, no?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah, because 1066 was when Normandy arrived.
Yeah,
like that. That's true. But then, it was, I think, Henry VIII's father who ended the War of Roses. I think it was like 100 years or something. So it started by his grandfather, great-grandfather. This was the fight between the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes. I think those lines of kings. Or something, I don't know, something of that. It went way back. So then there was still something there. But yeah, it must have, after that. Okay. So you're saying it was more organized after 1066?
Something like that.
Was that Richard II?
I'm not sure about that side.
Because he's a, even Shakespeare wrote about Richard II. Mm-hmm. May have been that was Richard. Because the name may have been someone else, you know, like Howard or Bernie. You know, they take on, you know.
No, Richard II, he was the great grandchild of Olo, the Viking,
okay.
Who was in charge of the Normandy, basically.
Okay. Sometimes the Richard stands out as a very prominent king in England.
Yes.
The Lionhearted.
He offered.
He's the Lionhearted.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He offered the King of England his sister as a wife, and that was the basis for William the Conqueror making the claim of the English throne. So there's some connection in that sense.
Okay.
He was the Duke of Normandy in 1035, and in 1066 he conquered England. But Normandy, they basically had their own rule until the French Revolution as well.
All the different kingdoms always were left intact. Because the point is, if it's already running, then they should just run according to your laws and give tax, and who cares? That's how India ran. There were almost 1,000 kingdoms. So as long as they pay tax to the central, then it doesn't matter. Because then you don't have to worry about it. You just have to worry that they're doing. In other words, you only have to worry about the emperor only has to worry about 1,000 people. That's all, you know. And then that one person, he has to worry about the millions, you know. So then it's much more efficient, you know. So it's a better governance. So naturally, then you know, French would do that. They would do. Everybody would do that. Right. The Germans, I think they were all little things, and then somebody was the. You know, became the emperor.
It's like the Bhakti Vriksha, the Chakrapati, the chakras, and then all the little subgroups.
Okay.
Same mechanics.
Okay, cool.